97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
All right, it is Friday morning. We're glad that we may get a little rain today. We'll see about that. You know, Kim St. Ange, yesterday, what was the heat index? Was it 102?
Was it?
Is that what it was?
I mean, wasn't the actual temperature at least 95, right?
It was hot. So because I'm taking a little vacation, I had to get the grass mowed before I left. I could not mow the grass before I left. And today it's supposed to rain, and I wasn't sure what time it was going to rain. So yesterday afternoon at 3 p.m., at the height of the heat, I was outside mowing my grass.
Lovely.
And I suffered through it. And I have to tell you, hats off to all of you who have to work out in that heat every day. Really, we sometimes, I should be embarrassed, we sit in here and complain that it's too cold in the studio. And there are people out digging ditches, yeah, and working for a living. And hats off to you.
Putting roofs on.
Putting roofs on.
Yeah,
there are guys in our
on
neighborhood doing that.
One of the properties we have, they put on a roof. Yeah, yesterday.
Wow.
Ugh. You know, and you see a lot of these guys who are,
they start early.
I saw one, they start very early for that reason, but I saw one of the other guys mowing a lawn or whatever. I was driving by, and you know, they usually wear, I guess it's to protect themselves from the sun and the bugs, but long sleeves, pants, and then they'll sometimes have that little mask thing, like,
yeah,
almost like the COVID era type mask, and I'm like, oh, you just, that looks so uncomfortable.
But you know, it was all right. There was a slight breeze. I had a hat on to protect the rather large bulbous nose that is on the front of my face to keep from getting sunburned. And yeah, I worked up a little bit of a sweat, but I got all that taken care of. So hopefully we'll get a little rain. It looks like we're going to get a little bit of relief from this heat. All right, coming up, we are going to talk to Brent Sadler, not Brett. He is an expert with the Heritage Foundation. We're going to talk to him a little bit more about all these questions about the Defense Department and what reports came out regarding Iran. Bottom of the hour, Eric Burleson, the congressman, of course, from District Number 7, he is going to talk a little bit more about the big, beautiful bill and why right now he's a no. He's a no. They pulled some things out in the Senate. The parliamentarian pulled some things out in the Senate. If they don't get it fixed, if it in its current state, he's a no, and that would sink this in the House of Representatives. So we'll talk to him about that at the bottom of the hour. Kim on a Whim coming up before the hour is over, and then we're going to get to Alan Dershowitz, who's going to join me here in the next hour as well at 8:08. The famous attorney, he's got a new book out, but I'm also anxious to talk to him about a lot of things, including what the Supreme Court is likely to do today. There are a couple of big issues still waiting to be decided, not the least of which this one on injunctions and one on birthright citizenship. There are going to be five pretty major decisions dropped by the United States Supreme Court about 2 hours from now. So just after our show ends at 9 a.m., they'll release the first one. And they're going to drop five of them today is what's expected. So it's going to be a momentous, newsworthy day. So keep your head on a swivel. And I'm sure Brian Kilmeade is going to have the very latest on this for you. So stay tuned right here to 97.1 FM Talk, of course, as you do every day anyway. Thank you, though, because we appreciate you for doing that. Right now, Ethan Bright, let's get to our top stories, please.
The Mark Cox Shortlist.
You can just kill ICE agents. You know that? You can just kill them. You don't have to hold your phone in their face and ask people when their birthday is and ask people what their name is and then try to find wherever they end up in Los Angeles. You can kill them.
Yeah, isn't that great? These are people on the internet. Hopefully the FBI is investigating that one. Some a woman from L.A. encouraging people to take to the streets and get violent.
Obliterated is a good word for me to use. I can tell people in South Carolina, nobody is going to work in these three sites anytime soon.
Yep, there you have it. Lindsey Graham is on board with the fact that no matter how you slice it, they heavily damaged all of these Iranian nuclear sites.
And so this is a reporter who has been unfortunately used by people who dislike Donald Trump in this government to push fake and false narratives.
Thank you, Caroline Levitt, out there complaining about the reporter who leaked the who published the leaked story, and they're also searching right now for the person that leaked it so they can shut that stuff down.
I think the birthright citizenship case highlights the total disregard for the Constitution that this president has because the language is so plain.
If the language was plain, it wouldn't be decided upon by the United States Supreme Court, Kwame. That is Kwame Raoul, who is the Attorney General of the state of Illinois. And just like J.B. Pritzker, the other hard left office holder in Illinois, he's going to say things that benefit the progressive movement in this country. And that's what they've used. They've twisted the 14th Amendment and the birthright citizenship issue to fit their agenda. And we know that. And thank goodness the president took this issue up and is challenging it. It was never intended for people to come here and have anchor babies, fly into the country because you know you're pregnant, give birth here. Suddenly, voila, you've got yourself a United States citizen. That's never what it was about. It was about people who were brought here maybe against their will as slaves so that they could, they had children and their children were considered American citizens. And I'm hoping after what I'm encouraged by the Planned Parenthood decision yesterday. That was a 6-3 decision. You know who the hard lefties are on the court. They vote as a block. It's the Republicans, if you've noticed, the Republican appointees, I should say, on the court, who are the ones that don't vote in a block. That's the amazing thing when I look and everybody say, well, the one side plays politics, the other side plays politics. Consistently, Elena Kagan and Sotomayor and Ketanji Brown Jackson vote as a block. Consistently. So we will be following those stories today. The Planned Parenthood story, in case you missed it, South Carolina was denying Medicaid money being given to Planned Parenthood. Planned Parenthood found some people who claimed to have been affected by it who sued and said it was their right to spend their health care money the way they wanted, which is taxpayer money, by the way. And the Supreme Court overturned two lower court decisions, said no, said the state has the authority to tell you no. And now Planned Parenthood's in a bit of a pickle because there are a lot of other states that also are restricting that. And the Supreme Court decision is going to have a huge impact on that. Anything we can do to defund Planned Parenthood is a step in the right direction. So, again, all those Supreme Court decisions, we should start to get the first one dropped. They drop them about every 10 or 15 minutes. They give you enough time to digest the first one, and then they drop the second one. So needless to say, it's going to be a busy day for the people reporting outside of the Supreme Court today. I'm sure our Shannon Bream will be up there as well, kind of parsing all this out. Some of it's really confusing because I'll sit at my desk and I'll wait for those decisions to drop. And it's all a bunch of legalese. You have to try to quickly wade through it, which is why it helps, I'm assuming, to have a law degree like Shannon has when you're trying to understand the issue and decide what they fixed.
Nothing like feeling stupid trying to read one of those decisions because you feel like you've got things under control and you're smart. Then you try to understand what the heck they're talking about. And I've done that before many times and I'm just lost.
Well, they list the whole argument in there and then they finally reach the conclusion at the end. So you have to basically fast forward to the end of the decision and try to figure out if they've overturned a lower court decision or if they've accepted it.
Couldn't they just do like a Cliff Notes version, like a one sentence recap that says, hey, if you have no clue what we're talking about, this is what we did.
That is not how they operate.
I'd appreciate that, Supreme Court. Thanks.
All right, we'll get to Brent Sadler coming up. We'll talk a little bit more about Iran, the intelligence that we have on these sites, and what the bottom line truth is here. We'll be back in just a minute.
Well, they hate him so much, they want him to lose more than they love the country, and that's sad. But do you have your cell phone? Can you look up what the definition of obliterate is? Look it up. Everybody right now, don't go to lindseygraham.com. That comes later. Look up obliterate. It says destroy utterly and wipe out.
Yeah, Senator Lindsey Graham on last night with Jesse Waters, he was talking about this dispute over what damage was really done in Iran, and which is pretty fascinating to me, because the same people that want to argue that they didn't have a nuclear weapon or they weren't ready to build one now want to argue with you that despite what we did, they could still have one in a few days. Really? You can't have it both ways. We've got Brent Sadler with us right now, and thrilled to get him on here this morning. Great to have him on, in fact. He is the Senior Research Fellow with the Allison Center for National Security at the Heritage Foundation, a Navy veteran himself. And Brent, welcome back to the show. How are you?
Doing great, and thanks for having me back on.
Absolutely. So there's a lot of dispute right now over what was leaked, what wasn't leaked. I watched the Secretary of Defense with his news conference yesterday, pretty clear. He and the chairman of the Joint Chiefs that they hit exactly what they intended to hit and destroyed what they intended to destroy.
Yeah, I mean, first off, just to want to say that Pentagon briefing yesterday is the type of briefing that I, you know, as someone from the military and now out in D.C. watching and trying to translate what I'm seeing, that was perhaps the best briefing, the one that I've wanted for many, many years. So that was very well done. It was the type of detail, the level of fidelity that's needed. Question still standing. We're not out of the woods yet with the Iranians. But the other part of this is this leaked information. Clearly, someone inside the Defense Intelligence Agency has somewhat of a sort of track record on this, as well as a reporter that was less than scrupulous, basically put out information that was very thin, not very well vetted, for purely partisan political purposes.
I am not, don't pretend to be any sort of expert when it comes to building a nuclear bomb. If you have enriched uranium, that in and of itself, you have to have a lab and you have to have the technology, you have to have the scientists. Yeah. It seems to me like we have at the very least disabled their ability to build a nuclear bomb.
Yeah, I mean, let's start with what we know the day before the attack on Fordor, Natanz, and Esfahan. The three nuclear sites that U.S. B-2 bombers and cruise missiles from a submarine took out over the weekend. We know there's about 900 pounds of highly enriched uranium, higher than 60%. Probably some of that was weapons grade. Not really sure, but that's the amount. The suspicion is it was distributed or all at one of those three sites. Those three sites have been categorically destroyed. And we are getting more and more detail that further confirms that in fact happened. Doesn't rule out, intelligence is never 100%, doesn't rule out the Iranians may have distributed some of it in the days before, whether they have enough to make a bomb. What is clear that they can't, whatever they have now, if they have it moved away, that's all they're going to have for several years. But they have been set back significantly. And I'd say it doesn't mean that we are done with this fight yet. The Iranians have to give up the program, and they can't have any future on-ramp to do so in the future.
I know there's a lot of detail we will never know because for security reasons, they just could never disclose that. But I have to be honest, I'm a little surprised at the amount of detail that they've been able to share so far. And I guess my question, maybe this seems like a silly question, is that a security issue where they're talking about how they sent planes to the West as kind of this decoy and then the real planes going east were the ones that actually carried out the mission and just all these different things, the technology that we have here in the United States?
Well, that giant poster that they put up was very nondescript and kind of like wavy, big wavy, sweepy arrows and icons. So I don't think it was really gets to the level of tactical security and information. And that's good, and that's what we'd expect, but it was detailed enough to let people know that the military was effective and that it destroyed the targets as intended. It was important to note that the general, the chairman, Raising Cain, actually made a threat to anyone else out there that has deeply buried sites. North Korea, China should take note that there are a lot of other people that have been studying similar sites, maybe not nuclear ones, but deeply buried critical strategic sites for many, many years. So that's an important point to reiterate, that there is a capability and a capacity that was communicated. And that's important, too, for deterrence.
Sure it is. Absolutely. We're talking to Brent Sadler from the Heritage Foundation, whose expertise is also in the area of naval warfare. And I know you've put a piece out on this not all that long ago, but You know, the president talks about bringing the steel industry back, how important that is. I know it's a key in building warships. And you've written an article about America's maritime muscle. Where do we stand? What do we need to do to make to continue our dominance in that area?
Well, I'm increasingly optimistic. I've been ringing the bell on this and working for about 5 years now since I got out of the Navy at Heritage Foundation on this point. And I got to tell you, if the American public needs an example of bipartisanship, it's this. The nation needs to strengthen its maritime industrial base as a strategic prerogative and also to build up its Navy. And Congress has put money towards it to get the resources. Leadership is in place now, it appears, in the Trump administration. The president himself personally has been very clear repeatedly that this is a priority of his. So we've got the leadership, we've got the plan, resources seem to be coming. I'm optimistic. But today, there's a lot of work. There is nowhere you can look and say, okay, this part of this industrial complex is secure. We don't need to worry about it. All of it. The people, the welders, the pipe fitters, the naval architects, the shipyards, the cranes, the dry docks, to the actual number of warships that we're able to put out to sea, all of it has been 30 years of neglect.
Wow. Obviously 30 years through a lot of administrations, Republican and Democrat.
Yeah, it's a national issue. And it's not that people did things intentionally. It was an accumulation of misguided priorities. We should have shifted to rebuilding our industry, naval and commercial maritime, back in 1999, 2000, mm-hmm. when we knew China was the threat. This is coming off of the third Taiwan crisis after all of their nuclear espionage and everything else. We didn't have to have a breakneck, break the bank kind of pace. But what we did was far less than sustaining the industrial might that would have kept the Navy, that would have deterred the Chinese. And today we're very far behind.
It's a great point. Brent Sadler, listen, thank you for your time today.
Thank you.
You bet. Take care of yourself. Great to get him on here from the Heritage Foundation. You can find out more about him and what he's talking about at heritage.org. He's got some great articles on maritime muscle and rebuilding America's Navy. And I think that's a food for thought for all of us. Coming up, we'll talk to Congressman Eric Burleson, find out why he's currently a no on the Big Beautiful Bill.
We are so close to passing President Trump's Big Beautiful Bill here in the U.S. Senate. We are not going to let the Senate parliamentarian or Democrats or even squishy Republicans stand in our way from passing the biggest tax cut on working class families and small businesses that this country has ever seen.
Capital Beat.
Yeah, that's Senator Jim Banks there talking about that. And boy, do I hope he's right. We've got Congressman Eric Burleson on the phone this morning from Missouri's 7th Congressional District. And Congressman, welcome back. How are you?
Hey, good to be back.
Absolutely. So what did Jim Banks seem to think that they've got this parliamentarian issue in hand? But Thune, the Senate leader, has said he's not going to overrule her.
Yeah, that's concerning because at the end of the day, I think that the Senate parliamentarian often is used as a foil. Because let's say you're in leadership. Let's say you're John Thune and you don't like, for example, the gun legislation that was put in the bill.
Congressman, can you hear me? Yeah, you're breaking up horribly. I'm not sure if listeners can hear you or not. We're getting a lot of
better.
Try it again.
Is that better?
Only slightly. I'm not quite sure what's going on. We must have a bad cell connection or something here.
Okay, I can call you back on a different.
Yep, we're gonna do that. Let me get you to try to call us back and see if we can get that to work a little better. I think what he's got to say here is important because right now he's a no vote on this bill if it was to come back to the House. So we'll try to get him back on the line here in a minute and see if we can get that cleared up a little bit.
Yeah, I'd be curious to hear how many other Congress members were yeses and now they're noes, specifically because of what's happened here in the last 24 hours.
Yeah, I the parliamentarian issue is it's frustrating that you've got somebody who we know was in this particular case appointed by Harry Reid. Her decisions seem to be quite pointed here. You know, she oversaw the impeachment, both impeachments of Donald Trump the first time around?
No, I didn't know that.
As parliamentarian, she was in charge of overseeing those impeachments. And now she's got her finger on the this big, beautiful bill and has the ability to radically change it. Let's see if our phone connection's any better. Congressman, are you there?
Hey, can you hear me?
Much better, sir. Thank you very much. Thank you. So you were saying about the confusion in the Senate?
Yeah, because let's say that this is what sometimes squishy leadership can do. They can use the Senate parliamentarian as a foil and say, let's say, for example, the gun legislation, which is what I fought for out in the House, to eliminate the registration and tax stamps on suppressors, short barrel rifles, short barrel shotguns, is thrown out by the Senate parliamentarian. Well, the president of the Senate, they can make sure that that language is not accurate, so she does throw it out. They can also choose not to try to fight the parliamentarian or try to retweak the language to get it through. So this is something that everyone needs to be mindful of is that, look, the Democrats passed massive sweeping reform like Obamacare and the Green New Deal, right? The IRA, all through reconciliation. And for this parliamentarian to say that you could pass those things, but you can't cut them in reconciliation is ridiculous. And it's something that we need to be, screaming from the rooftops and making sure the Senate knows that this is not going to be acceptable, because it's not, if it comes back with all this stuff ripped out of it, there is no way that I'm voting for this.
Real quickly, can you explain what the Senate parliamentarian even does? Because I'll be honest, I'm not super familiar with this role, and obviously it's very key in the Senate.
Yeah, so this is all part of this procedure that was put in place that's under what they call the Byrd Rule, named after former Senator Byrd. And it was a bill that was the reconciliation bill that created this reconciliation process. And it was designed so that if government wants to correct its budget, long-term budget, and make policy changes to do that, then it doesn't need to meet the 60-vote threshold. And that's because of that, that's the way that in order to get things through the Senate, everybody tries to use the reconciliation process. And so through that process, there are rules that are part of the Byrd Rule that you have to kind of get around or get through. And they basically, the Byrd Rule is that it can't be substantive policy. It has to be changing things fiscally. And so that's what this is about.
So we're stuck dealing with a rule put in by, what did Rush Limbaugh used to call him? Senator KKK Byrd. And I think that's what Limbaugh called him. So just to be clear on something you said a minute ago, because if I understood you correctly, I didn't know this. Are you saying that one thing the parliamentarian affected was the gun rules that you wanted? Has that been part of the change?
Yes. Yes. Yesterday, the parliamentarian threw out all the gun bills.
Oh, my
God. The
gun
rules. So, I mean, that's throughout all of our savings, the things that we found in order to pay for these tax cuts.
Right.
Throughout major substantive pieces, for example, the rule that we had that said that states can't put illegal immigrants on Medicaid, they threw that out.
Crazy.
They threw out the language for work requirements for food stamps or SNAP. Threw that out.
So
it's just crazy.
How many people were yeses before who are now noes?
On the House side, House members are, hair is on fire. But even people that are not necessarily the normal fighters like myself, there's a lot of people that are upset. So I've spoken with some people, spoke with Senator Ron Johnson last night. He says, keep your powder dry. They're going to keep fighting. They're going to try to go force it back through. At the end of the day, this bill is going to, he says, fingers crossed, it's going to come out better than it did from the House.
Wow. Well, Trent Lott, when he was a Senate Majority Leader, overruled the parliamentarian. I wonder what Thune is afraid of. I mean, are they treating this the way Republicans down here, when you used to be in the Senate in Missouri, treat the PQ like they don't use it very often. They refer to it as the nuclear option.
Yeah, that's exactly. That's a great analogy. It's very similar to that.
That's unfortunate.
Because it's what, a bad look? Like, what are the ramifications if you do that? Why is it so bad for Thune to do that?
So they're worried about the precedent that it sets, so that when Democrats get back into power, that they will overrule the parliamentarian and pass even worse things.
Wow. You know, I was reading a little bit about her. I mean, I know she was appointed by Harry Reid. I wonder why there hasn't been a move to change the person in that position since 2012. Certainly Republicans would have had an opportunity to do that over the past couple of years, right?
Yeah, one would think. I think it's because this is how it was done in Missouri. I think that whoever comes in as the speaker should be able to pick all of the staff.
Yes.
So they should be able to say, okay, the clerk, that clerk was great for the previous person, but I've got my own person. I'm going to use them. And they should have to make an affirmative decision to choose who is going to be the chaplain, for example. We're dealing with a chaplain that was picked by Nancy Pelosi. So in the House, that's ridiculous. Yes. Mike Johnson should be able to pick his chaplain.
Yeah. Congressman, what's going on in the Oversight Committee right now?
So we are, Jamie Comer is, and the Oversight Committee is looking into the Biden administration and who is actually running the show, or who is actually running things in the Biden administration. Because we're getting a lot of whistleblowers that are coming forward, people that may are sometimes not voluntarily coming forward, but they're in depositions telling us that Joe Biden, for example, wasn't the final say on some of the executive orders. They were taking some of that input from other staffers, from people that were in the inner circle. So that it's really disturbing, and it's something that we're going to continue to uncover.
Yeah, and subpoenas are going to be issued. Do I understand one's already been issued?
Yes, I believe so.
Yeah, I thought I read that.
I'm forgetting his name, but he was Joe Biden's top guy.
Yeah, Joe Biden's work husband, as I saw it described.
That's right, her work husband. He's the one that David Hogg in that Project Veritas video described as the one that was in charge.
Wow. Interesting. Eric Burleson, we always appreciate having you on. You're a wealth of knowledge. Thank you.
Thank you, guys. Have a great weekend.
We'll talk to you soon, Congressman. Thank you. Good to get him on. I did not realize that. That was one of the things I missed. I saw where they had pulled some key provisions out,
the
parliamentarian, the Medicaid one. I didn't know about the gun changes. And that's all fiscal because they charged $200 for the tax stamp on the suppressors. And they were removing that from the bill, the fee, and they took the wording out altogether. So I don't know what their excuse is for that. If it's not partisan, I can't imagine what else it would be. What's coming up on Kim and a Whim?
Well, call me ignorant, but I didn't realize in several states across the country, it's legal to just walk around naked wherever you want to go. You just walk around naked. Well, I'm going to explain one city's efforts now to, encourage people to put on underpants.
Wouldn't that be nice?
A fun fact for your Friday morning. Several states across the country allow you to just walk around naked. Who knew? Okay, I did not know till I started digging into this story. So some states like Oregon, they have relaxed views on nudity in certain areas. California, no surprise there. In Kansas, nudity is only prohibited if it's done for sexual gratification.
How do you prove that?
What the heck?
How do you prove that?
Well, I don't want to go there. I don't want to think about
that. Because the definition of sexual gratification is different for everyone.
Was it the state of Washington where people were going around that really popular park?
Yeah, it was a park.
And they were doing things, pleasuring themselves. That would be the sexual gratification in public.
Yeah, in public. Thank
you. I see. But apparently you can also walk around naked in Vermont. Totally legal to just walk around naked.
Kansas, of all places.
I know, I was very surprised about Kansas. But Vermont, there's video. There was a local TV station there out of Burlington, Vermont, that did a story where some dudes just full on just walking downtown. People are passing him like it's no big deal, just completely naked. So Burlington, the city council there approved a new ordinance. They're trying to stop people from walking around naked downtown because they said that there have been multiple reports of incidents in recent years of indecent exposure in public areas and specifically around schools. So they're at least trying to limit where you can, I guess, be naked. Listen to one of the city councilors talking about this.
Based off of similar ordinances that cities and towns around Vermont and around the country have stood up, we need to find a fine balance between protecting folks' right to free expression, as well as that level of indecent exposure that really is a public nuisance.
You can express yourself freely without walking around naked, okay? I don't get that. In fact, this was crazy to me. So as I'm Googling this, Fox 2 actually did a story back in 2022, and here's the headline. Is it legal to drive naked in Missouri? Yes, but also no. It says that it's illegal to expose your genitalia to others in public, because that, of course, would be indecent exposure, and then fall under the category, I guess, of sexual misconduct.
But if you're in your car...
But they say that as long as no one sees you, you can. So it only becomes a crime if someone sees you. So there's an attorney who gave an example. They said, for example, if you're naked in your home, that's legal. If you stand naked by your home window, that's also legal. But if people see you naked through your window because your window is visible to the public, it has then become illegal and you're guilty of lewdness. So I guess if someone sees you driving around in your car naked in Missouri, all of a sudden, that is a crime.
So for those of you who drive your little Jeeps around with the ducks on the dash, don't take the doors off if you're going to drive naked.
Or just don't drive naked. That's also an option.
Who would do that?
Apparently people, because they have to make laws like this. In Illinois, for any of you living
Here's
in Illinois,
scary.
If you're worried, it says anyone 17 or older can be charged with public indecency by engaging in the following: an act of sexual penetration, I'm reading verbatim, by the way, or sexual conduct, a lewd exposure of the body done with the intent to arouse or to satisfy. This is just weird. Like, let's just all be clothed, all right?
I'm still stuck on being naked in the car. Like, we're looking at used cars right now. How do I know that somebody's naked butt wasn't on that seat?
These are questions you might need to ask.
The print on it.
Another reason to get, like, leather or pleather seats instead of
that
cloth.
That doesn't make it any better.
You
wipe it off, I guess,
clean.
A little bit easy. You know, the Carfax report, when you can see the accidents that it's been in, maybe you need to also request if someone had driven naked in the car.
This will take a few people back. There was a trend in the 70s, Kim, called streaking.
In the 70s? I think that's still a trend.
People would do it, and they even made a song about it.
Is that you, Ethel? Proud. Where do you think you're going? On his anatomy. You can't give us a piece.
Ray Stevens, his wife, joined in on the excitement there. Ethel went streaking there. So
colleges do that, you know, like if you're a senior and you go streaking. And I remember even in the movie Old School, which
yes.
I bet will shock you guys that I've seen that movie.
I love that you've seen that movie.
Remember, he's like, I'm going streaking through the quad and into the gymnasium. Come on, everybody!
And then he's
I'm
running
going streaking.
Naked down the street,
yeah,
and then his wife finds him, and that was one of the best
what
scenes
the
in the
heck?
Movie.
Anyway, if you see someone driving naked in Missouri,
it's
you can, in
legal,
fact, I no. If
Unless
you see them
you.
Driving naked, you could. And you, I guess you
I
see their area, then you could call 911.
More
Just
things
saying.
To more things to
the
worry
more you
about.
Know. You guys are welcome for that information.
Yeah, I saw a guy naked downtown one day, but that would have been illegal. All right, coming up, we're going to talk to lawyer and author and professor Alan Dershowitz. Get his take on what's coming out of the United States Supreme Court this morning in about an hour. We're going to have him on next, though. Stay tuned.
Get more at 971talk.com.